Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirrani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we have the Michael Jackson movie. Well on its way to potentially $1 billion. We're going to talk about what we thought about the movie, what's next, what we liked, what we didn't like, is it worth seeing, and then the next 10 movies on our top 50 movies of the century so far, 2025, dating back to 2000, 20 through 11, all that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 30, last episode of April. We are a third of the way through the year. I had to do some math there for a second. A third of the way through the movie year, and we end the first 4 months with a big release. We got the Michael Jackson movie, aka Michael. Michael, is it going to be part one? We'll see. Part one of multiple. We'll talk about Michael. We have Apex, Netflix movie with Charlize Theron, and then we have our next 10 movies on our top 50 movies of the century since the year 2000. Very excited as we enter the top 20. Quite the list last week, obviously, with the big reveal that Clemmer's never seen Spider-Verse. That was easily the big moment. Have you seen it? Have you watched it?
I did. I watched it. I liked it a lot. It was very good. I would not be my top 75. Mm. But it would be my top 200. It was fantastic. It's so creative, visually impressive. Yeah. Really good.
Game, literal game changer, which I don't think you get much anymore. I mean, some movies can change the game, but obviously it's like how many movies we had at this point. That, like, changed the game. So glad you've seen it. Glad it's off your list. But let's get right into Michael. Discover the story of Michael Jackson, they say. One of the most influential artists the world has ever known in his life beyond the music. Tracing his journey from the discovery of his extraordinary talent as the lead of the Jackson 5 to the visionary artist whose creative ambition fueled a relentless pursuit to become the biggest entertainer in the world, highlighting both his life offstage and some of the most iconic performances from his early solo career. 2 hours and 7 minutes long. Antoine Fuqua, the director, Training Day, Equalizer, Southpaw, a lot of movies, obviously. You've likely seen an Antoine Fuqua movie. Jafar Jackson, Michael Jackson's nephew, son of Jermaine, I believe, in the lead role as Michael. Coleman Domingo. I might have issues if anyone doesn't like Coleman Domingo's performance. Just a bit of a tease. I love Coleman Domingo in this. You're going to say it out of the gates. Nia Long was there on set. Mm-hmm. Miles popcorn. Teller was there. You might not be able to recognize him. A transformative role for Miles Teller. Another one. Someone else in the movie. I'm not going to say who else was in this because some people didn't realize it was that person. So we'll talk about that.
I can't believe that. We'll get into it, but I'm confused by that.
Yeah, there were people. I talked to a couple people yesterday who were like, I did not know that was that person. So I don't want to say it because if you figure it out, it's kind of fun. going to make a lot of money at the box office. Is it 100 million potentially first weekend?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. It might overperform, yeah.
Crazy.
97 I saw this morning.
Not particularly shocked, though, by that.
No.
Yeah, not really shocked by that. Because, like, if you went and saw this weekend, you were likely in a relatively packed theater. And there was some energy for it. Big time split Rotten Tomatoes, 38% critics, 93% audience. Big crowd pleaser. But in terms of movie making, where do you land? 7.7, 39 Metacritic, Letterboxd 3.6. Kirk, what did you give Michael?
My life, as I get older, are basically defined by moments I know I'm going to remember when I'm on my deathbed, which would certainly be like the birth of my children, the death of my parents. And for me now, like when they introduce bubbles for the first time, is literally one of my favorite scenes in any movie of all. I was in awe in the theater when it happened. Like I was pissed.
I didn't realize that's what was happening. I was like, what is this? I was actually pissed. I didn't call it.
And they all just stand, and he just kind of comes around, and I don't even know what to give this movie. Like, I have a feeling, I have a couple of many thoughts about this movie. First of all, I'm obviously at an age where to say Taylor Swift's an enormous star, but you can be like my son, Harry has no interest in Taylor Swift. He can keep her out of his life. He can watch YouTube. Like Michael Jackson was beyond unavoidable around Thriller. Like it's impossible to state. I don't think anybody's ever been a bigger star in the history of America than Michael Jackson was when Thriller came out. So for me, he's just an enormous figure. And same with you guys, I know, in everyone's life. He's an enormous figure. I think there's a chance this movie might become, in some ways, like a Mommy Dearest for generations, which is just going to become this huge cult movie. It's got that as well. From like a watchability scale, I would give it like a 10,000 out of 100. As a movie, I would give it like a 12 out of 100. So I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to bump it up. It is 2 hours and 14 minutes, I think. And it felt like a rare time, I will say this, it felt like it was about 45 minutes. That's not a good thing, by the way, necessarily. But it's like, hey, do you like Billie Jean? Yeah, I like Billie Jean. Let's watch it recreated. Do you like Beat It? Yeah. Human Nature? You bet. Off the Wall? Yeah, I love that album. It's not a movie. It's a propaganda film. Like it's a piece of like North Korean, like, you know, that kind of thing where he made 14 hole in ones. Like, you know, I don't know what to say about it as a quality of film because it's not a movie. I don't know what to do with this. It's not a movie. I've never seen anything quite like it. I'm not even getting into, I know we're going to get into this. We'll leave the controversial stuff aside because I don't even think that's really part of the conversation about this movie. You could have made this movie very easily and never addressed that and still made a good movie.
I also don't believe the timeline of this movie overlaps with any of that stuff either. That's the alleged stuff.
I mean, the accusations. Yeah, I mean, right. Who knows? But like, there's no Emmanuel Lewis in this movie sitting on his lap. You know, there's none of that. I remember as a kid, even as a kid, I was like, that's weird that Webster's on his lap at the American Music Awards. I'm with you. Like, to me, Coleman Domingo like got the assignment. Like, he was just having fun with this stupid role. Like, just over the top. Just absolute like campy performance. The kid is like a good Michael Jackson impersonator. There's nothing to his performance because there's nothing to the movie. It's an empty role. It's an empty movie. You know, it's the kind of movie where, you know, all of a sudden like he's just like, yeah, oh, here's Thriller. Or the end of the movie, like they just jump ahead to Bad and he sings Bad. I'm like, that's the end of the movie. I'm like, what the fuck happened in the years? Like, where is anything? It's just series of moments. And I get why audience, you know, the dumber you are, the more you like this movie. That's what I would say. Yep. Or the less curious. If you want to go see a piece of Michael Jackson, you know, I'm sure they have impersonators in Las Vegas. This is just it with a bigger budget. So I'll give it a... Because it's very, very watchable. It's a bad movie, but it's very watchable. I'm going to give it a 26.
Mm-hmm. There's a great video, if you've ever seen it. It's of a Michael Jackson impersonator in downtown Las Vegas watching another Michael Jackson impersonator.
Yeah. But that's such a classic.
And the comments like this, like it's as if the first guy is Michael Jackson. Watch it. It's very
right,
funny.
Right.
Okay, 26. I'm a little higher than you, but still like 2.5 stars on Letterboxd. I gave it a 56 out of 100. It is very watchable.
56?
Yeah. Yeah, I just feel like I've seen much worse this year. But It's still not a good movie. Let me be very clear. It's 56 out of 100. This is closer, though, to being something worth watching than I expected. What's weird to me is that they bring up a lot of... Look, like, you, whatever, if you think they should have shoehorned in, like, the allegation stuff maybe later on, which, I mean, I don't know how they're going to tackle that with it. There's going to be a second part of this movie, which that's not a spoiler. That's been said for a while.
Michael will, there's going to be a part will two. Return.
He'll return.
Yeah.
He'll return.
Yeah, and he'll be
his
in
The story continues.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a conversation saved for that movie, I feel like, more than anything. But the weird thing is, like, there's a lot of negative things that are kind of lumped into negative connotations about his life that they do bring up in this movie. And then they kind of just move away from him, right? Like, or things that are the things that kind of build in the stereotypes about him or are brought up as ways to, like, mock him. But they don't, like, ever go into any depth on it, which is weird. It's like you would think they just wouldn't bring him up, right? Like, they talk about, it's a biopic, so whatever. We're just going to fucking say shit at this point. I think it's just better to talk about that than beat around the bush. He sits in a chair for the nose job. Right? Like, they show his skin stuff. They show the condition that he has. But then there's never, like, any real depth added to it. Like, those are things that, if you were to, like, talk about Michael Jackson, like, those are things that are considered, right? Like, people would make fun of him or parody or negative. And that they never go down the road. So it's weird to me that they bring those things up, but then never put any depth on it. It's like, you would think they just would move past it and be like, hey, here's Bad, here's Beat It, here's Thriller. Like, you'd think it would just be full-on, straight, balls to the wall, nothing but positivity. But it's like, they're willing to at least, like, mention some of these things, but then there's no depth. It's got the most title cards in the history of any movie. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, they age him up. Like, you could kind of, like, I don't know how dumb they think they're. No respect for the audience by doing that, by the way. Like, you could pass the time just by showing him getting older and looking different.
No, I think a lot of people are stupid. They're going to go see this movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of dummies. Just, this is the big dummy movie. I mean, it's weird
to me. I think he's really good, but as an imitation of it, like, they didn't really give him too much of a chance to do much more than just sing and dance, which he's very good at. A little freaky. The Thriller scene is, like, freaky. Like almost, I was like, is this just, like, a remastered version of the Thriller music video? I'm not saying that's why it should win awards. It was just kind of just like, wow, that's, well, kind of wild to look at. I think Coleman Domingo's good. It's just like, I don't know. It's like, when I left Bohemian Rhapsody, it was like, that was nothing. But, like, I didn't feel any, like, disappointment. I was, like, kind of disappointed by this. I'm like, oh, you know, there was something here. Like, there was, like, why not do it? Why not pick, like, four songs and go in depth into why he made those songs? Like, they were clearly willing. The family's behind this. So, like, let's not, you know, we know this by now. The family,
well,
you know, makes
most
the calls,
of the family.
Most,
right?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of decide what goes in and out. But, like, they were willing to put enough stuff in here where, yes, it could have been a puff piece, whatever. But, like, they could have put some weight to it a little bit. Like, they were willing to go there, but then they just stopped. They stopped short of ever doing it. Like, you'd be like, oh, they're going to go down that road. And it's like, oh, they jumped 2 years ahead. Now we're on to the next thing. It's like, what the hell? It's like, well, I'll hang back on that for a minute or two. So it was weird. It was not what I expect. Like, it's kind of what I expected. I kind of thought I'd be in, like, the 40s, 50s. So it's kind of around quality-wise what I expected, but not the reasons why. I was very surprised, very bizarre, very strange. I liked a little more of Bohemian Rhapsody. Both two, again, the music biopic genre is just, I mean, it just is what it is at this point. Yeah, so
it could be 50, good.
56
though.
Currently out of 100. I saw one. We're gonna see it again. I kind of want to see it again. So
could definitely be good. I mean, it's a shame. I mean, look, it's just sanitized. Every family member. You're right. I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess I've been living in a haze. I always thought I grew up with Janet Jackson, but I think I just hallucinated her.
No,
who was Willis dating on Different Strokes, Clem?
No, actually, right? I know you're good at trivia stuff. She's not actually his sister. That is you. Okay, you've
damn
been
it, I,
Mandela
just, I don't. I,
yeah.
So, yeah, I don't, you know, yeah. But, like, to your point, like, Prince, another complicated and, like, really interesting figure. Ezra, the OJ director. Ezra Edelman, is it? No. The OJ in America?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that right? He directed, like, a six-part Prince documentary that has gotten spiked completely by the, like, Michael Jackson is so ripe for a 10-part documentary like the OJ in America. And more than anybody, but that's never... Now we live in a world where when the movie's over, all the executive producers are family members. The guy that Miles Teller plays is an executive producer in the movie. Like, we're done. Like, these, they're not interested in a complicated Michael. The most you're going to get is he's going to say, you know, his dad calls him Big Nose. So he's going to sit in the chair an hour and a half later and say, I have a big nose. That's the most you're going to get from this stuff.
It's, even like they bring up, like, Prince gets brought up. It's like, dive deeper into that. Go to do the We Are the World stuff. Like, why not? Like, you mentioned that. You. Like, yeah, that's totally fine. Yeah. It's something. And then, yeah, it's just weird. Just very, very weird. It's like not what I expected. Very, it's both what I expected and not what I expected. Anyway, that's my rant. Sorry. Ken Jack, your score.
Yeah, I think I echo a lot of what you guys are saying. And I think it's a hard one to evaluate because it's much less of a serious biopic and more of like a Marvel movie. It's like, it's clearly purpose built to be an entertainment product and a vessel for the audiences to have fun with what is he has one of the best discographies ever. So like, that's what it's built for. Have the audiences have fun with the music, but you can't really credit the movie for any of that. You can't credit the movie for Michael's discography, right? So that's what kind of makes it hard for me to kind of recompense, I guess, with. So I think it's fine, but it's also just dissatisfying within the space of a biopic, especially for someone like Michael. And because it's not a fictional story. Like, this is a real guy. A lot of us know about Michael, even if like you weren't, like you were saying, Kirk, like he's so pervasive in like our pop culture and music space. Like, everyone knows who Michael Jackson is. Like, we at least have like a baseline of who he was as a person. But there's just no interest in exploring Michael as a person, despite him being probably one of, if not the most eccentric celebrities in history. There's a lot of like, here is Michael doing a bizarre thing, but it's never, here's why Michael might do that. You know what I mean? It's just right. Like, it's very, very surface level, showing you the thing, but never why it might be happening.
They don't really hire you. The family kind of thought he was weird, right? Like, they're pretty, like, even like Bubbles walks in, they're like, what the fuck? Like,
they're just like, okay, and then move on. Here's a giraffe, moving on. Here's a llama, moving right. on. Like, here's him reading Finding Neverland for the 50th time, moving on. Like, it's like,
yeah, you think Peter Pan was a factor for him at all? I didn't get that.
Wizard crazy. Of Oz, and they never talked like, nothing about the Wiz.
And well, like, Diana Ross stuff had to get spiked, I guess.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just dancing around these like psychological issues, which I felt is like kind of cheap. And if they're willing to work around all that, I kind of wish they had just for the movie's sake built a more compelling narrative. Even if that meant like bending the story, I think that would have been better for an actual movie. Because like, hey, his dad's a jerk off, but he's also not 100% wrong because he's looking out for his family. That's not enough friction for a real movie, right? Like, that's just not enough. You need more there. But like the entertainment stuff, I think like you were saying, Kirk, like that works. It's great music, which you can't credit the movie for. A solid recreation at the stage level, which you can credit the movie for. And I think Jafar Jackson, like, that's basically an impossible test. That's like the most, if you're talking about a musical biopic, this is the, like, that is the cream de la crop best role you could ever ask for. Like, everyone's going to be auditioning for that.
Yeah.
He got it, call it Nepo, whatever. I think it was an impossible task. He at very least minimum nailed the dancing. And I think that is impressive enough for me where I'm like, okay, good job. But I didn't get much to work with outside of that. There's no emotional depth to the character of Michael Jackson in this movie at all. So
yeah, he's not a person. He's like not a human being.
Exactly.
He's
like a fucking video game character in this. There's just no.
I think the music stuff, again, it's like you can absolutely debate and be like, does that even matter? And I'd probably say no. Like, it doesn't make it good that it's a good recreation. But I'd say the music stuff is leagues more entertaining than like something like a Behemoth. I was like. At least I was like enthralled. I was like, oh, this is like kind of fascinating to look at. Like,
once he goes into any sort of music video, I'm way more into that than I was with like Band-Aid or whatever. And I at least have to give him the credit for the dancing, where you really don't give credit to, I think, what's his name, at all for almost anything except for the acting parts. Like, he didn't do the singing or the dancing or stage stuff, whatever, any of that in Bohemian. So I do think I give him the credit there. Like you said, with Coleman Domingo, I appreciated him in that. Neil Long, definitely along for the ride for sure. Miles Teller got paid probably $100,000 per syllable in this movie, probably around there. So respect him for that. I'm landing on a 45 out of 100. I think as an entertainment vessel, that all works. You can't credit them for the music, but you can credit them for the stage recreations, which I do think were good. And it was entertaining. Like, the whole time you're toe tapping. You're like, yeah, it's the songs I love, but yeah, it's like, it's not a functional movie, which I think really takes it down a lot. So 45 out of 100 for me.
They really they played the songs in full too. I mean,
oh yeah.
And actually, when they said "Beat It," I'm like, man, I was like, I kind of want to hear this whole song right now. And I'm like, they'll cut it off. Now they played the whole song. I was like, oh hell yeah.
Okay,
Clemmer, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I mean, this is not good. I give it a 38. It is like Kirk said, like propaganda. I think it's probably the best word for it. Like he's not a human being. He's like an angel. That's just this great heroic creature. There's nothing wrong. Hey, I'm bored. Time to go visit the sick kids in the cancer ward. Like, everything he does is only positive and wonderful and great. And there's no, like, Kendrick, you're saying there's no why to end this happening. I saw another Puff piece this year, Melania. I saw that earlier this year. And both movies use the song Billie Jean. It's Melania's favorite song. And both movies also will not talk about anything either person does wrong at all. Yeah, the music's good. Jafar Jackson's really good. I thought he was fantastic. There's nothing for him to do here acting-wise, but he nails everything. I mean, that's an impossible role to play. He's very good. The dancing's really good. Yeah, there's just nothing here. People love it, though.
I'm saying, my weird counter to that. Like, I understand what you're saying about, like portrays him as... They were willing to bring up enough, like, personal demons, at least, so that they could have made something. Like, even, like the Pepsi fire stuff. Like, the nose... Like, they brought up enough, like, personal thing where they could at least, like, build something interesting out of that. But if they would have actually...
Nothing's ever his fault, though. Like, he's not, like, a complicated, like... You know, he's just not a complicated figure. You're right. Like, yeah, he has a nose job because of his dad. The fire because his dad pushed him this. And it's kind of like I would like some, like, you know, sorry, Clemmer, but like Billie Jean is a song he wrote. He said at the time, because of his brothers, a lot of women were saying that their brothers, you know, had gotten women pregnant. And it turned out that a book had come out later to the woman that it said Michael Jackson impregnated her. And like, he wrote this like interesting, like one of the greatest songs ever written, maybe the greatest album ever made. And I forget if somebody else said this on the podcast or read it somewhere this week. Like, there's real anger in like Billie Jean and Beat It and even the way he performed. And like, where is that guy in this movie? Like, you see that empty face. I'm like, who's the guy who said like, fuck this, I'm going to leave the family and do Off the Wall, like this crazy album. Like, where is this guy? They keep telling us he's this wonder, and Neil Long looks at him while she eats her popcorn and is kind of like staring at him. But like, where is that guy? He's just not there.
This whole movie is a cartoon. And you also have, on the other side, you have Coleman Domingo just like twirling his mustache and just being, everything Joe Jackson does is evil. Everything Michael does is wonderful and good. And even, Jeff, even the stuff like getting classic surgery, that's, I mean, not that that's a bad thing or anything, but like, he does it because Joe made fun of him. And like, everything that's happening, it's because he's just this misunderstood angelic creature. It was very bizarre. The songs are good, but honestly, just like stay home and watch the movie, the video.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah. As much as I like them, I will be fair and echo the same thing I said, Bohemian Rhapsody. People are like, oh, Live Aid was so great. Thriller's great. I'm like, yeah, well, you can just go on YouTube and see the same thing.
Listen to Thriller. It's an amazing album. There's nothing in this movie.
I'd love to see this 4-hour cut.
I do wonder if they must dive more into stuff, right? Like, that must be what it is, and they were like, cut this out.
That's what they say? I mean, that's what they've said anyway. I don't, who knows?
Pay Fuqua like $15 million to go do the reshoots. Mm-hmm. For $10 million to do reshoots, got paid $15 million to do the whole movie as it was before that. Like, this was a disaster, I guess. One of the victims' names couldn't be put in the movie because he had a...
part of the agreement.
Was his name could never be used in a movie. And I guess a lot of the movie was them attacking the victim and kind of portraying Michael as this once again, this angelic creature. I don't know. This movie, there's nothing here.
Gooch, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm at a 30. I thought this was, I mean, it's not even surface level. It's 1,000 kilometers above the earth looking down. Like, this is one of the most interesting people in the 20th century, if not like the history of America. If you don't want to talk about his controversies, talk about his genius as a musician, but they don't go to any point. Like you guys are saying, like these are not real characters throughout the movie. They are some nice performances. It feels like they're all in different movies. Like, I think Jafar is in a different movie than Coleman is. I think Coleman's having a lot more fun than Neil Long is. Like, these are all, like, it almost feels like they are all in different films. All completely one note. Like, Coleman Domingo is basically the dad from Walk Hard. Like, he is just wrong kid died. Like, he's just evil. He's just evil. I mean, even like they have like a monkey and a giraffe in this movie, just like Walk Hard. Like, it is, it commits Walk Hard sins in ways that we have never seen before.
There's a lot of the same shit that the Springsteen movie did too. Like, them rearranging the songs in order. It's like,
Right. Notebooks with like thoughts. Just like, some of the same characters, by the way, in the Springsteen movie.
Crazy.
And that approach, I almost wish they had taken that approach with it. Because like you were saying, Kirk, he is like, he is perfect for a 10-part doc. Like, this is too much to fit. He is too much to fit into 2 hours of runtime. Like, yeah. The Thriller album, the Off the Wall, like, each one of those albums alone is worthy of a two-hour movie. And we get none of what made him a genius, none of, like, the... Like, the most we see him artistically is, like, we'll talk about it in a second, but, like, uniting the Crips and the Bloods. Like, that is the most artistic he gets, is, like, his dance routine. Other than that, like, it's just him, like, rearranging Post-it notes on a board. It's so shallow and lazy and just, I don't know. If I was I'm not the biggest Michael Jackson fan, but if I was, I would be let down by this. Like, what are you gaining from this that you've seen all of this before? We've all seen all of this before. It's nothing new, and it's just lesser. It's a huge letdown, but I'll give it a 30 because, like you guys are saying, it is fun. It moves very quickly, and the songs are great, but outside of that, God.
Great shot of Gary, Indiana in the beginning. Do you think they used a drone for that? How do you think they got that?
Great CGI. Unbelievable.
Did they screen record their Google Maps flyover for that? Here's how I would have done it. And a lot of times when I don't like something I say, I don't really know how I would have done it. I actually feel like I have the formula here. I don't even need too much negativity. If you want to make it Puff Piece City and you want to make it positive, great. But do it around, open up with the meeting they have around the fire, right? Where they're talking about what he wants to do with his career as a solo artist, right? He's like, I want to be mysterious. You know, I want to have a stadium tour. I want to make small films. I think open up maybe with that. You can go flashback a Jackson 5 moment, maybe a moment. That's kind of how you establish the dad. He had some like stuff with his childhood. Then you get, you know, you do Billie Jean, you do Beat It, you do Thriller, Beat It, Billie Jean, Bad, something like that. And you do it like the Steve Jobs movie. You just take those four moments or five moments in his life. You just show me what went into each song, what got tied into it. And that's it. Like, it doesn't need to be, I don't need it to win an Oscar. I don't need it to move me in a way that I'm to tears, but like put a little interesting depth to each song. What went into it? Like Kirk said, what about like Billie Jean, right? Maybe, you know, go into like the production of Thriller. Like just give me like a little more backstory, maybe behind the scenes history of those like four or five songs, and just do it that way. Like it doesn't need to be A to Z. Yeah. Have it a little more less linear. I'd have been perfectly okay with that. I don't care if they don't dive into anything too. They don't need to make him out to be a villain or like whatever. But that would have been interesting. Like break down those songs, iconic songs. That would have been my preference.
There's a guy who, you know, like outsmarted Paul McCartney and bought the Beatles catalog. Like this is a savvy. What's the business help? But like, you know, McCartney told that story. Like Jackson worked with him. You wouldn't know that from this movie. But, you know, they worked together and then, you know, he became a very shrewd, very smart business. Like he knew the business of music, you know, which is weird. That first Teller scene, I think, is very strange that group, because like Michael Jackson's been like, I want to be famous. I want to be a huge star. I want to do this. They sit, there's all these talking heads. And Miles Teller says, I think you want to be the biggest star in the world, which is obvious. Everybody would say that. And the other guys in the meeting are like, Michael, we're so sorry this guy's saying this. Like, we can remove him. I'm like, why? Like, isn't that like what he want? I don't know. Tellers, when I first saw Miles Teller was going to be in, he had that, like, crazy hair. I was like, oh, he's going to give a batshit, like, fun performance. He's fucking got nothing to do. Nothing. He just sits there.
He carries Mickey Mouse into the hospital. That's
he brings Mickey Mouse. He doesn't get to play Twister with Bubbles, but he brings Mickey Mouse into the, yeah, and then the Mike Myers cameo is, you know, just so fucking. What's it? Linda Richman, was that her name on SNL?
Yeah, right. Coffee Talk.
Yeah, so he's doing. He's like literally doing that. Is that all he does? That was like cameos and like movie. Is that it? Like, is that work? You know,
thanks. And it's Tarantino. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mentioned the Steve Jobs movie. That movie at least was willing to have its protagonist have complicated issues.
That's the problem, Jeff. It's like the Jackson was never going to let this stuff happen.
But again, I don't even care if they don't let it. Like, just give me something interesting. And like the backstory of those songs is at least interesting. I don't care if it's a Puff piece. I don't even need that from Steve Jobs. But like, I'd at least rather that. Like, if that's what it is, that's what it is, right?
The backstory of Billie Jean though is like something the Jackson family will not want to tell.
You're cutting out, Kirk. Hold on. We have technical difficulties here for a second. Sorry if that's like a jump cut if you're watching it. But Kirk just brought up a point too, and Gucci said it too. It's like the second. I mean, I think it's pretty clear what the second one's going to be, right? It's going to be very clearly about how he died,
and who to blame, because they mentioned painkillers in this first one 90 times, right? Like it's almost like a wink and a nod at the camera.
They show us like the little drip going like they.
Yeah. Yeah. I love propofol, John Breaker. I love propofol.
And he is a bad guy. Like he should be treated. Coleman Domingo should play both roles.
Yeah,
because he'd be great in that role.
God,
fucking
that'd be
great.
Awesome.
Great in that role. Like, just go all in. Just fucking go all in. Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't matter. Like we always say, this movie's going to make so much money. It's just, you know.
It made more internationally. It made 97 here, and it made like 115 internationally. So
yeah,
that doesn't surprise me one bit at all.
Hey, no. That's great.
Surprising.
In that sense,
absolutely.
Great. Whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
My theater, I don't know about your all's, but my theater cheered at the very end. Like
we didn't have any cheers in mine.
No cheers. Everyone was just pretty, it was pretty raucous when the music started, I would say, for sure. Like everyone was toe tapping, getting.
This is one of those ones where box office success is very good, because I do feel like this gets a lot of people into the theater who are deaf. Like Mario's one thing. Like you're going to take your kids to go see a movie, right? Like whatever. Like I don't think you're going to pick up too many like brand new. Like I do think this is going to bring a lot of people into the theater who haven't been in a long time. So hopefully that's gets them in and gets them to stay. So whatever. In terms of that, that's great. I don't know, like whatever. But yeah, this isn't very good. I was entertained. Definitely factored into my score personally. I was entertained enough, whatever. But I'm more disappointed in this than some other music biopics. I actually like this should have been better. Like this is a disservice to an extent. Like this should have been better, and there should have been a different way to do it. And I don't know. Just ugh. This genre is washed, as the kids say. I just like the thing is though, it's like what I don't know, like when these things are controlled by the estate and controlled by people, like I just like you're never gonna get.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, well, with the exception of some Elton John, right? Like Elton John was like, let's make a musical, you know, fuck me
no
up.
Red tape.
paint me out to be a piece of shit, I don't care. But that's like that's so
Johnny
few and
Cash
far between.
Did it too. Johnny Cash wasn't like a flowery.
Yeah. But again, that's like it's every 10, there's maybe one where someone's willing to like go there.
Yeah, but you see, like that's what's going to happen is we're going to get all these artists where it's like they're not going to be on the level of like with Michael, again, one of the most eccentric, interesting dudes ever. But like instead, we're going to get like fucking Robbie Williams, who's like the guy who's going to be willing to do something crazy with his documentary or like something like that. And like people were not as interested in them are going to be the ones most willing to like get rid of the red tape. Not to say Elton John isn't interesting. I appreciate him doing that, but
I don't even feel that you need to, with someone like Michael, go into the controversy. Like, obviously, I would love to see it.
No, you don't.
But there's so much genius. There's so much musical genius there that I would be so interested in, like, learning about. I didn't live through it. By the time I was conscious, Michael Jackson was a pedophile. Like, that, or at least, like, in the public sphere. Like, that is the joke that was going around by the time I was in elementary school, middle school. He was strange looking and touch children. That was just how people talked about him. I would love to have like learned what that genius looked like in the moment, but instead I just get to hear his songs, which I've heard a million times. Like that does nothing for no one. And I don't know what they're gonna do in part two. Like it's lining up for like a Wicked part two kind of thing, where it's like we've gotten through his best part of his discography and now we're heading into an area where they aren't going to talk about the controversies very clearly. Like they're just going to reframe it in a propaganda piece. Like Kirk said, like, are people going to show out for that? Like, I don't know.
Probably not the same crowds, I would imagine.
Yeah.
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 Does this have any awards chances? Like any and all?
Below the line, probably, I would say. No. Like, you're going to get
acting wise, though. Like,
no.
Coleman
acting,
Domingo.
No, God, no. No, 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 no.
But Coleman Domingo very clearly signed up for this, thinking this would be an Oscar winner for him.
The reviews are so bad, though. I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's what's going to sink it. Like, if it was good, you'd definitely see Jafar, probably. You definitely see Coleman Domingo, but no, it's not.
You don't think like costume hair?
I think it got killed too early because of like critical reviews.
What do you think? Did you say costume? Maybe.
I'm thinking costume
costume is that great, though.
No,
I just think it's going to get forgotten. Like
here's the thing. When this comes around, they're going to want this on the stage for something. Like they're going to want Jafar to come on and do the dance and do everything at the Oscars. So I think it'll be costume, hair, and makeup.
Yeah, I could see if it gets anything, it'd be like costume, maybe. But obviously, there's no original music, so it's not going to get anything like that. Yeah.
An original song would have been hilarious to end this on if they just let Jafar go crazy.
Fucking great. Go for it.
Hope the next one opens up with the Free Willy song.
Yes, please. We're on this, yeah.
Michael. We all varying degrees of didn't care for it, but was entertained. I mean, that's the thing. It was entertaining. Go see it though. Whatever. Go have fun. If you like Michael Jackson music, just go fucking see it. Like you'll enjoy multiple scenes, and that's kind of it. Just that shouldn't be what we're saying about it. I think it's kind of the
it's weird because we're here to digest it as a movie. Right, yeah. Like we're here to try and tell you how to digest, like how we digest it as a movie. But like as an entertainment product, if you like Michael Jackson, you're gonna have fun. I'd be shocked if you didn't. Yeah.
What's crazy is the last thing is I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 30 years ago. ABC did a miniseries with Angela Bassett and Lawrence Hilton Jacobs about the Jackson American family. It was basically really about Joe Jackson, and it was way more interesting. Like it was based on the book. It was really about him, and it's actually worth. It's on YouTube. It's worth watching. And it's funny how much more sanitized something gets 30 years later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's actually a pretty good look at him as a character. Because like, I also think, you know, like, not to get too, we'll move on in a second, but like, if like Michael Jackson's mistakes are because his father was a monster, well, his father was a monster for some reason too.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of like sometimes, and I know you can't, then you go all the way to Adam and Eve, you keep doing that, but like, it's kind of like, well, I'd like to know why he was like that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, this guy, say what you want about Joe Jackson, like, literally built, like, the Jackson 5, which is, Michael Jackson is like Mozart, of course, but, like, you know, this family had, if you've ever seen the Jackson childhood home, they made that house, like, they had no money. And this guy did this for a reason, and you never give him a scene where it's like,
they explain why in the movie, Kirk. He said he doesn't want to work in the steel mill anymore.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's it's kind of like, it's kind of a movie where it's like they're like, it's a montage. Like, oh, they're yawning and getting on the bus and doing this and doing. It's kind of like, well, there's more than that. But anyway, I don't know. It's worth watching. It's on YouTube, that miniseries.
Like, not even just those other brothers. And like Janet was also a megastar. Like, he raised, like, it's. Oh, yeah, true. Good point.
Joe Jackson, to your point, like, he's his own movie. Like, he's a King Richard. Like, you can do that with him.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's a better movie. That's a great point. That's a better movie. Great point. And probably, I mean, they don't want that movie, of course, but like, that's a. It's funny, almost like in like his grave, there's still the family, like, yeah, he's a bad guy in this movie, but they're still almost afraid of him. Like, he's like a sanitized, winking bad guy in this movie. They don't go all in. You know, he's not like Ike Turner was. That's for, you know, in another bad guy music biopic person. So, yeah. Anyway.
217 million global, 97 million domestic, both a record for a biopic.
Yeah. That's crazy. Ultimately, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. That's it on Michael. We'll eventually talk about part two, I guess. Michael will return in Avengers Doomsday. Back. He'll be back.
Oh, by the way, the funny thing before I forget, did you see how the extra that was playing John Landis didn't want to get on the crane? He's like, it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous set condition. I don't want to get on the crane and do the thing for Thriller. Very funny.
One of the funniest stories of all time, it's a tweet I saw a while ago on the set of Three Amigos. Martin Short was telling a story. John Landis was bitching out Chevy Chase. In Steve Martin, and Chase just looks at him, nods. He's like, John, it's like, anything else, Chevy Chase? Yeah, try not to kill anyone today.
Oh, stuff coming back from that.
I will give the next movie 100 out of 100 if there's a scene of Michael Jackson asking George Lucas to play Jar Jar Binks. I will give that movie a perfect score if they include that in the next movie.
Scorsese directed the Bad video.
I was waiting for that. There?
Yeah.
Yeah. A whole movie about the making of Captain EO, the Michael Jackson Disney World attraction at Epcot. I'll take that as well. that is the Michael Jackson. Fascinating. Also, wasn't Captain EO directed by Francis Ford Coppola?
Yep, sure was.
Unbelievable. What a wild career. Which they do actually.
Get a great
I
eye.
Do think they actually mentioned that because then you saw EO really quickly in this movie. I think they showed it. Or I was maybe at Alamo Drafthouse and I saw it beforehand. That is that.
This episode of Project Big Screen is brought to you by Blue Chew. The future of erectile function is here. Blue Chew Gold is changing the way millions of men are having sex in 2026.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash. This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium, where each episode releases 3 hours early. So get it ad-free before anybody else, only when you join Rumble Premium. New episodes of Surviving Barstool will be released every Sunday and Wednesday, leading up to the Labor Day finale on September 7th. You can watch Surviving Barstool at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, Kirk solving murders in Minnesota. So it's going to be three of us for Apex from Balthasar Cormacore. Did I say that right? You've seen some movies from him potentially. Everest, who can forget Everest from 2015? Two Guns with Mark Wahlberg. Contraband with Mark Wahlberg. He's the second most frequent collaborator outside of Peter Berg. He also did that movie with Shailene Woodley and Sam Claflin, Adrift. Did anyone see that?
Vaguely remember it, but I don't remember.
Not horrible, honestly. Not horrible. And he also did 2022's Beast with Idris Elba. Also not as horrible.
That was pretty
good. He does really like okay movies.
This wasn't horrible.
Like, Everest wasn't horrible, I don't think.
No.
But no, he hasn't done anything that's like insanely good. I'm not gonna call Two Guns horrible.
It's very
Contraband was horrible.
Contraband, yeah, very bad.
Contraband was really bad. Contraband was bad. A really miscast Giovanni Ribisi role. Contraband. Yeah. This is Apex, though. This one might not be very good. A grieving woman pushing her limits on a solo adventure in the Australian wild is ensnared in a twisted game with a cunning killer who thinks she's prey. I'm going to bring up a movie in a second, though, that this reminds me of that was much better. And I don't know if anyone remembers it. See if you can pull it out of your head. Kenjack, I think we talked about it on Lights, Camera, Barstool. Hour and 46 minutes long. Charlize Theron in the lead role. Taron Egerton. Netflix movie. 66%, 54% split Rotten Tomatoes. 6.2 IMDb. 57 Metacritic. 2.7 Letterboxed. I get the name of it. What was the name of the movie? It was.
I got The River Wild. I mean, this is like with Meryl Streep came out in the 90s.
There's like a really well. It's not that similar, but there was like a similar like in terms of like Predator movie that was like really claustrophobic that was kind of surprisingly entertaining.
Where was a guy chasing a girl somewhere?
Crawl.
Strange
Crawl.
Crawl. Yeah.
Crawl. Yeah. Caio Scodelario and Barry Pepper. We interviewed Barry Pepper, I think, for the movie.
We did.
She's from those Blade Runner movies, among other things. Or Maze Runner, not Blade Runner. Runner, sorry. Definitely not Blade Runner.
Got Blade Runner on the brain.
Crawl was a cool movie. Anyway, well, Kendrick, what do you think about Apex?
So I think this was like a pretty fun cat and mouse chase movie. Like, doesn't have a lot of like pomp and circumstance, like no craziness. Like nothing's going to, I think, going to reinvent the wheel, whatever, idiom you want to throw on it. But I think it shows off some fun, adrenaline junkie stuff. And I really like Taron Egerton in this. I love seeing this side of him because he doesn't really get to do a lot of stuff like this. Like, I think the closest thing you could say where he got to play like a really complex character that on this side of the moral spectrum would be like in Blackbird, which he was fantastic in. And I think he was really good here. And I think the things I appreciate most about Apex is that the go went out in Australia on location, did the shot that I think looked really cool. And when they obviously had to go to green screen, I think it still looked pretty solid, especially for a Netflix production where like your expectations don't really stay up that high for a streaming movie. And I like the fact that this was not like a 2016 girl boss movie where like Charlize Theron has to like stop the movie and tell you like, oh, you think a girl can't beat you in a fight and then do some crazy uppercut that sends him flying 50 feet in the air. No, it's realistic. It's like a pretty realistic. Like this is, if you put like an adrenaline junkie woman versus like the psychopath dude, like I could see it playing out something, you know, obviously not the extreme dramatics of it, but like I could see it kind of playing out like that. So it's realistic to an extent. And I just like their dynamic, like the yin and yang of craziness, right? Like they're two sides of like the, which they make a point to tell you, but like two sides of like that same sort of wiring coin and the chaotic good and chaotic evil. And I liked it and I enjoyed it. I ended up with a 70 out of it. Nothing crazy, but I had fun. I think it good dynamic, good actors and good on location stunts and fights and stuff. The only thing that would make it better is if Tyler Rake showed up. That is the only thing missing from this movie. Was Chris Hemsworth as Tyler Rake showing up and saving the day. But other than that, really, I had enough fun with it for a streaming movie to get it over that, which we talk about a lot, Mendoza line, whatever.
Gooch, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm at a 60. Pretty shocked by this. I think it's really great in terms of streaming. It's thematically pretty flat, like when it tries to really touch into something. I think it doesn't really land. But to Ken Jack's point, the adrenaline junkie stuff really works for me. And Taron Egerton, fantastic, fantastic. We got to get him into a real movie here soon. Yeah. But this really showcases just kind of like what a talent he is and his range. I think he's completely menacing in this and really steals the show. I think Charlize Theron, a bit miscast, because
yeah.
I think maybe, and this is maybe unfair, but a younger actress would have worked a little better here. And she's just so clean and done up. And, you know, she has just a supermodel face. So it's just like, is she really doing all this? And I think like when it does go practical, I wish they really committed, because it seems like they did make a big effort to shoot on location, do a lot of these practical, you know, X Games. I don't even know what to call it. Extreme sport kind of stuff. I think they do a really good job when it's, you know, in frame. The CGI, when they blend it in, I think looks terrible. But it isn't too much of the movie to derail it. So I had a really fun time with this, and it's taut. It moves quick. It's not too long. 60 out of 100. I will be recommending this to people. I was surprised.
Clemmer, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm a little below that, but not too far below. I'm a 54, I guess. I thought Charlize Theron was pretty good. I understand how you could say she's miscast. That's fair. But it looks like she tried to do a lot of her own stunts. I don't know. It kind of worked for me. I honestly like the first 10 minutes of the movie the best. It's like her and Eric Bana just on a mountain. Like, I could just watch this the whole time. I think I would have liked it better. The Taron Egerton stuff, I think Taron Egerton's a good actor. Something like that. It's just more like that role is just like, I've seen that role in like 10,000 movies where like, oh, you're crazy. You're evil. Like we don't really know why. He just is this evil guy. It seemed very trite. I enjoyed the first half of the movie way more than the second half. But it was fine for streaming. Like you said, Gooch, for streaming, this is definitely on the higher end of things. I guess it's like faint praise. But it's good short runtime. Yeah, it's fine. Something to throw on late at night, I guess. Not a movie I would recommend, but just below that.
Yeah, I have it at 64. I think it's an enjoyable time. I think it gets a little predictable and like kind of blah in some spots. But it is entertaining for much of it, and it sometimes doesn't look great. It's just kind of missing something. I don't know exactly what that is, but it's just missing that kind of thing that can kind of really take it over the edge in terms of like a super interesting survival thriller way. But I do like. Again, it's like, I mean, it's kind of a testament. It's like you put interesting people in a movie, it doesn't have to be the greatest thing ever made, and they can sometimes kind of elevate it to another level. Like, it helps that you have, like, really, like, if these were two, like, mediocre to whatever actors, Charlize Theron, Taron Egerton, then this is probably not real. This is, like, bad.
Yeah.
I don't think it works. I think that's kind of what helps lift it up there, which then kind of comes back around in, like, a circle of, like, well, I kind of wish there was more here. Because then you have these two good actors, like, give them more to play with, right? That's where it kind of left me like, eh.
Same.
But it's a tight movie that doesn't overstay its welcome. That's the other thing, too. It's a little longer, and this thing also starts to bog down bad. But, like, decent enough for, like, a Netflix release. Like, better than a lot of the shit they put out.
I liked how she was kind of quiet, too. Like, Egerton was obviously... And that was his role. I get it, kind of chewing the scenery. But I liked how she was understated. And she kind of explains, like, no, I kind of just like being by myself. And, like, you could tell she's uncomfortable in social situations and stuff. I kind of like that. I think she's obviously a very good actress. So,
yeah.
Like you said, Jeff, I appreciated having her and Egerton in this movie because it made a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, I will say, Egerton has done a few roles now where I think it is very obvious he wants to be Wolverine, and this was another step. He's like, I can do the musicals like Hugh Jackman. I can even do the Australian accent.
On our news list, but that is a rumor that they're not going to cast Wolverine early on in the X, which I think is a great call. Like, don't bring Wolverine in quite yet. Like, maybe establish some other things first, because he was such the main focus of everything from the Fox X-Men movies. But he's always been tied to Wolverine. He always has been. Always.
He's got the physical. He's got that physicality. Like, he does feel like a Hugh Jackman disciple, in the way he acts and just kind of his talent level and like what he's good at.
He's jacked and he fully commits. Like, when you see him in a role like this or other things, like, and that's a thing I think with Wolverine. You need to be able to be like viable as like a cool, charismatic guy, but also you need to fully commit and go crazy. And I think he at least in this showed that off. But I think that was a good point. How old is he? I'd say like 30. Oh, tall,
not a
short
guy.
He seems like too much of a little guy to play Wolverine.
Wolverine's supposed to be like...
I know, but for some reason, Edgerton, it hits me harder. I don't know.
He is 5'9". I think that's fine for an on-screen Wolverine.
I just feel like he's just like too little. I don't know. I see like
look at a picture of him in Blackbird, because like in Blackbird he's jacked and like you could see.
Yeah,
like,
and remember he would go through a rigorous.
Oh, of course, and he's a very good actor. Like that. Putting that aside, I just for me that he doesn't scream Wolverine when I see him on screen. But I mean, I never thought Robert Downey Jr. would be Iron Man either. So
his best roles, he really is fantastic. He's so good in like Tetris. I think he's Oscar worthy in Rocket Man. I think he's great in Kingsman. Remember Carry On from like last year or 2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish he had.
He keeps elevating these like crappy streaming movies.
Yeah, and it's like,
I don't know what his like agent's deal is, but he's got to get a new agent because he is handsome, a great actor, can do a lot of different things, and
like he's jacked.
Yeah.
He's huge.
He is.
He's fucking, like when he like bulks up, he can get huge.
He's got to do some, like, Goose, you're right. He's got to do some better movies. Like, get out of the streaming shit. Because, like, I know we do the streaming movies, like, a lot in the show, and they're all bad. Or like this, like, okay, at best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do agree with Gucci's point, though, that I do think maybe one thing that I was missing is maybe a younger or more athletic, and, like, not to say Charlize Theron is not athletic, but, like a Sasha Call type person where it's, like, they are physically, like, a little bit more imposing, and they are, like, you can maybe buy that element a little bit more. Because that role didn't require a ton of, I would say, experienced acting, like her part of it. Like all that, like you were saying, Clemmer, all that, like the serious, the crazy shit, that's all going to Edgerton in the first place. And this person is supposed to be like the, you know, the stone that water breaks against. So I do think that would have been better off maybe with a different, a more viable person or viable actor.
He's also in the Robin Hood movie people forget about with Jamie Foxx. Remember that? That's
right. And then Hugh Jackman's in a different Robin Hood movie, which is we'll talk about soon too. It's all coming together.
Yeah, definitely check this out. Not a ton to say on this. It's a simple streaming movie. I think it's an enjoyable survivalist thriller that just probably could have had a little more, but you put good people in it. It's like you get me to watch it. So I think definitely check out Apex. Even if you don't think it's going to be anything great, and I'm not sure people are going to be, you know, swayed to a point where like this is unbelievable, but I think most people have a good enough time with it. You can check out Apex on streaming on Netflix now. Let's talk about some movie news. A lot of trailers this week. Let's start out with Clayface from DC, October 23rd, 2026. Clayface is a body horror story, up-and-coming actor whose face is disfigured by a gangster. As a last resort, he turns to a scientist, Dr. Caitlin Bates. The lead actor in this, Tom Rhys-Harris, plays Clayface. Naomi Ackie plays the doctor, who's being compared to as Elizabeth Holmes. That's an Elizabeth Holmes-type character, that. Theranos, who transforms his body into clay. This is a great teaser trailer. Teaser trailer. Mm-hmm.
The character's awesome. I mean, I love comics. I love Batman comics, especially. I've always loved the Clayface character. The animated series does a good job with the Clayface character, but there's a real haunting element to this character. It's a very sad story.
Yeah. I think that this is exactly what I want out of DC, because one of the big problems we talked about a lot, like MCU, at least in Marvel, they were so reluctant to swing, so reluctant to strike out. And I think that they're like, just like variation, right, between some of the Marvel projects. Like, there's nothing that has ever gone too far from, like, that singular line. And I think this is obviously an attempt. Like, you go from Superman or even Supergirl to this, where it's like you get the Hope Corps shit and you're going into something insane, body horror, Cronenberg stuff. I love that. I love just striking out and doing something different. And even when Marvel does it, when they do something like Werewolf by Night, like, they succeed. So I really appreciate them at least attempting, even if it sucks, whatever. I appreciate them making the attempt at it. And the crew here, it's co-written Mike Flanagan and I think Oisin Amini, or I don't know as well, but Mike Flanagan writing this for DC, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, and the other thing with Marvel is they'll bring in these great directors and then they kind of just don't let them do what they brought them in to do. And this is what I wanted from DC. Like you said, Kinjik, I want them to bring in directors. When you bring in Mike Flanagan, you bring him in for a reason, because you want a Mike Flanagan movie. That's what this looks like. Not my favorite director, but this looks just what I wanted, like exactly what I wanted. Such a great character, like you said, Clemmer. The animated series is what I'm most familiar with in terms of like his story, and this looks like it's going to do it justice. It's such an interesting character.
No chance we see Batman here, right? Like, there's no chance.
Damn, sure hope not. This would be a really weird spot to introduce.
It's just weird. It's weird to have a Clayface story.
I don't think that's what James Gunn has in mind for.
But yeah. It could be wrong.
They might mention it.
I imagine we've already known about that too. Like if Batman was in this, I'm guessing. But it's just weird to have a Clayface story and no Batman. And the trailer shows it takes place in Gotham, so I don't know.
Next trailer comes out October 23rd this year. Very excited. Coyote vs. Acme, finally. This was a tax write-off movie that they're finally releasing. After every product made by the Acme Corporation has backfired on Wile E. Coyote in his pursuit of the Roadrunner, down-and-out human billboard attorney Kevin Avery represents Coyote in a lawsuit against Acme. A growing friendship between Coyote and Kevin motivates their determination to win the case as it pits them against Buddy Crane, the intimidating boss of Kevin's former law firm, who now represents Acme. That is played by John Cena. The Buddy Kevin is played by Will Forte, Lana Condor in this as well. Tons of Looney Tune cameos, Foghorn Leghorn, big role. Bugs Bunny's in this. There's always been a long rumor that this is like really good. I need to see it to believe that. I didn't necessarily love the trailer, but I also am not sure something like this translates well to a trailer, right? Like I could see this like trailer being like mediocre movie maybe hitting. I would laugh very hard if the movie was like complete dog shit and people just fought over it for
really
years.
Suck. It would really
like,
suck.
You gotta man. Release it, and then it's just like ass. But I want it to be good. Okay,
I trust Will Forte. Like yeah, I really too. Like The Last
yep.
Man on Earth.
Love Will. Yep.
Obviously, Nebraska is incredible, but he is the one who's been really pushing this. He's like, this. I think he had a lot to do with behind the scenes movie as well as starring in it, and he's been advocating for this nonstop. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Listen, it's a catch-up entertainment release. It's a catch-up entertainment, baby.
Yeah.
Save the day.
It's true. God, one of the funniest releases. Like, they just keep buying like the Looney Tunes movies that don't get picked up and distributed. It's so funny.
Yeah.
The one this last year was good. The Looney Tunes movie from last year was very enjoyable. Yeah. Very enjoyable movie.
I love the Looney Tunes. I wish they were still like Warner Brothers just completely pushing them to the side makes no sense. Like those characters still play. Like that type of comedy is just endlessly
slapstick.
Watchable.
People don't want to do slapstick anymore. It sucks. They don't want everyone. It's more like social deficit disorder shit. Yeah. Like little mini jokes. They just have someone hit someone in the head with a hammer. That works.
Yeah,
it works. On.
July 10th, 2026. Evil Dead Burn. A woman seeks comfort at her in-laws in their remote house when she loves her husband in a car accident. Loses her husband, not loves her. Jesus Christ. However, after this, the discovery of an ancient book, the family reunion becomes a hellish nightmare. Horrendous teaser trailer. Lazy, bad teaser trailer. If you like the Evil Dead series, this is a bad trailer.
It almost felt like it was a fake.
Why do they do this?
Like, is this a real trailer? Or is this like a fan-made trailer? Like, it almost seems fake.
Did we get duped? Maybe we got duped.
Because like it didn't have a ton of views on it, and I haven't heard anything about this trailer dropping.
Maybe we got duped. Maybe we got fucking duped.
The Evil Dead franchise. How do you guys feel about it? Like post Raimi.
They had the one that was decent from the director we reviewed 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, but it's just so different. It's almost a completely different franchise.
Lee Cronin,
sorry.
Yeah, Lee Cronin's Evil Dead.
Who's directing this one?
Evil Dead.
How do you not get Lee Cronin back? What is he doing?
He's doing
Mummy.
But like,
come on,
this is by Sebastian Vanichek.
Vanichek.
They should have held out for Cronin.
Spider-Noir, much more extended trailer. This is the Nick Cage black and white Spider-Man series spinoff of Spider-Verse. Sort of. They can't use the same name, so it's not. It's Ben Reilly is the character's name. Ben Reilly, an aging, down on his luck private investigator, grapples with his past life as the only superhero in 1930s New York City, the Spider. When an exceptional case comes his way, Reilly must become the Spider once more. Again, they can't use Spider-Man stuff, so it's going to be a little weird in that sense. Nick Cage in the lead role. Lamar Morris is in this movie. Lee Joon Lee plays Black Cat. Abraham Popola plays Tombstone. Jack Houston plays Sandman. Brendan Gleeson plays Silvermane. So a lot of characters that I don't know if they'll say their names or that they're based on. It's in black and white, but you can also watch it in color. No offense, if you watch in color, you're a fucking loser. You're a loser if you watch it in color. I'm just saying it. It is what it is.
No argument.
The fact they're even offering it is pathetic. Like, just offer it in black and white. That's part of the charm of this character.
You are.
We'll see though. I don't know how this is going to be. I could see this being terrible.
I watched the first two episodes of it.
We got them and I forgot to watch. I think they expired.
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes of it, but I think we're still under embargo, so I can't actually say anything about
okay.
it.
Okay. I want it to be good, and I hope it's good. I'm very excited to watch it, but I could also see it not working.
Yeah.
I watched in black and white.
It kind of leads to a Gooch. Gooch, you last week said why Spider-Verse works so well is because you can take people who don't typically play these types of roles and characters and make them cartoons and make them animated, and they work. And now this is the exact opposite of that.
I was about to say, I do think this might have worked better as an animated series. I don't know. This is a big swing, though, to their credit. Like, this is interesting thing that. With a, like we're talking about with Clayface, like you're doing something interesting with an IP versus just pumping out IP, like base product. Like, this, if you're going to do it, I guess this is what I would want. Yeah, it's just, the whole thing is weird. I guess Nick Cage as Spider-Noir is the weird part. Like, I get that he voiced the character, but he's so old. Mm-hmm. He's old.
Pretty old.
He's ancient. I'm interested, though. I am interested. And I do think Spider-Man's one of the few characters, along with, like, Batman, where you can kind of overindulge in terms of the character. Like, you can put out probably a project a year, and it still will...
The timing's weird, though, with the movie coming out in, like, a couple months. Just weird.
Yeah, alongside with the other film.
Yeah.
Super Troopers 3, last one. August 7th, 2026. I mean, this fucking super. It's Super Troopers. I don't know. It's like...
Never liked Super Troopers.
You've never been a fan? Do you like Beer Fest?
Just never liked it. What's that?
You like Beer Fest?
Well, I liked it more than Super Troopers.
Yeah. I like Beer Fest more. I enjoy Beer Fest. Really stupid, but... Landfill 2 is very funny.
Landfill 2 is such a good bit.
I saw the second one.
It's such a good bit. Oh, Super Troopers 2? Yeah. Super Troopers 2 sunk. It was really bad. The whole idea, they tried to make a whole bit out of it, like going to Canada, and they basically did the PMT, like, oh, we're so nice, hey, like bit. Like, that was the whole joke. And it didn't really work, but I would say the trailer for this looks a lot better than Super Troopers 2 was.
And then a couple of quick pieces of the news. John Wick spinoff, Kane, has become filming.
Very excited for that. Film. Very excited.
But the other John Wick spinoff was saved in editing. It wasn't bad. It was like kind of enjoyable, but they had to work at it because it apparently was a disaster. Miami Vice 85 with Michael B. Jordan and Austin Butler is official. Joseph Kaczynski is directing. I'm very excited for this.
Very excited.
But I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, me too.
That's a great duo. I think that's a great duo with a great director pick for this.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope it's colorful, bright, and they don't try and I hope the look is of the era. Yes. I just hope they don't dumb it down color-wise and wash it out. Mummy 4 with Brendan Fraser officially releasing October 15th, 2027. Mm. Good for Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
If Lee Cronin's not involved, I don't want it.
I don't want it. If it's not tied into that movie, I don't want it. And then movie adaptation of the video game series Battlefield in the works from Christopher McQuarrie with Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, I don't know. So Battlefield, is it Battlefield 1 or is it Battlefield 2? Or is it
a war movie?
General war movie. It's like Call of Duty Sheridan bullshit, basically. Like,
right. It's a war movie. It's like they should just get somebody to make the greatest war movie of all time, but then just call it Call of Duty retroactively. Just
and the Battlefield plot lines suck. Like the stories are bad. Like there are plenty of great shooter games with like great campaigns. Like the Battlefield storylines are not particularly good, at least in my opinion. Like some of the Call of Duty ones are pretty good. Never liked the Battlefield story campaigns.
Will the Battlefield fans be upset if they don't stick to the lore of Battlefield is the question.
I'm thinking no. Unless they were to do like...
That's good then, I think.
Yeah, I guess that could be considered a good thing. Except unless it was literally Battlefield 1, the World War 1 version that they did a few years ago, which was amazing. That was one of the best games they ever made. And that'd be a tougher one.
Yeah, I just don't think... I've said this a million times now. I don't think the video game era, I think, is going to be a rough one in terms of like churning over the comic book stuff. Obviously, has run its course a little bit, but I think the transition into video games will be quite worse because the storytelling just isn't there. It's not built for this kind of stuff, I don't think.
Yeah.
And then what have we been watching? What have we been picking up? Euphoria.
Yeah. Better than the first one.
It does look great.
The visuals are fucking—they're insane.
Storyline is interesting. The Zendaya storyline stuff is interesting. I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, and fucking—I didn't even recognize him in the moment. Little Hat Adebisi from The Oz. The guy who's also in Lost. that the guy plays Alamo in whatever. I feel like I haven't seen him in a while. I didn't even recognize him.
Best movie of the week we have right in the talk about Over Your Dead Body, which have you guys seen that? Anybody?
Yeah, we went to a screening for it. We watched we interviewed Yorma Taccone on the last episode for it.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I'm not gonna say, but it's like a 76 for me. I really enjoyed it. I had a fun time. Recommend the three movies we talked about today, along with Michael and Apex. This is the best one. Just like a dark comedy that has no problem being darker comedy, and it does it well. A strong like B minus, like a solid B minus movie.
Yeah, the original is on Netflix too. Like it's based off a Norwegian movie, and that original is pretty good too.
Maul has been great. Animated Star Wars never misses. I'm going to be a broken record until that ends. I've loved Daredevil Born Again is on a heater.
Very good. Very good.
Again, I said it last week, again, broken record, but there was like rumors that the first season, they kind of had to change things and things are kind of lost in the shuffle and rewritten. And they're like, and there was a confidence like season two is going to be great. It's great. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's really great. Your Friends and Neighbors, anyone watch that on Apple TV, the John Hamm show?
I never finished the first season, but I did like it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Marzen's in this, which reminds me of Marzen was written out of paradise, basically. It's fine. I like John Hamm. There's a weird problem, though, is that he does these voiceover parts of every episode, and it sounds too much like the car commercials that he does. And it's like, it kind of takes me out of it. It's a little weird.
I need to watch season two of Beef. That's one thing I figure I've been missing, is I haven't started season two of Beef yet.
I did start Invincible season four. It's great. This is like the meat of, like, I'd say the best part of the series, and it's showing. I love the fucking dinosaur. Love him.
The end, the last episode, I think, is really good, too. Very, very heart-pounding. And I think it's my favorite season. I'm not sure how far you went so far, but it was my favorite season since the original so far. First season, I guess, whatever.
Clemmer, you ever do any Invincible?
Ever? No.
I think you'd like
it. You're aware of it, though?
I've heard of it. I don't know anything about it.
I think if you like comic books, like this is a very good, one of the best like adaptations, I think, that you'll find.
Yeah, but, I mean, the series itself is fantastic. Like, really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm. In terms of physical stuff, I'm diving more and more into just different boutique Blu-ray sellers for DVD and Blu-ray and 4K. Got this great Masters of Cinema High Noon from Eureka. Fantastic edition. Watched it over the weekend. Looks fucking incredible. Fantastic. Some good special features in there as well, but it's a really great transfer there. Also, kind of bought some stuff for the first time from Shout, which has a good collection of movies.
Shout is a great one.
Fargo on the way. Come up with the slipcover. Got Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Got Clue, which is great.
Oh, nice.
This looks fantastic. Look at this one. Point Break. Got Point Break as well.
Best movie of the 90s.
And then Red Dawn.
Oh, banger. Back-to-back Swayze bangers.
So, yeah, just some really cool, fun ones from those eras. And then lastly, Hong Kong Cinema Classics. It's a great line. Some great box sets, too. This is the Better Tomorrow trilogy.
Oh, hell yeah. That one rocks. That's a really
awesome
good one.
Box set. This is great. I'm going to watch it this week. Hard Boiled, John Woo.
Banger.
They can be great cases, too. Really nice stuff. Great artwork. And then, of course, The Killer. Yeah. The Killer's come out. I think Arrow, there's a couple other different distributors that released it, but the Hong Kong Classics one looked great. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll get it in that sense. All 4K. Yeah, this is a great line.
Gareth, which version of The Killer did you get? The new one?
The new one. The better, in my opinion, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah.
Gareth Evans, I think, has a company that does a lot of these Hong Kong Classic ones, too, that are just really good. It's like something 88?
On Supercritics. Also, a physical copy here. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze. Robbie Fox and I talk about it on Supercritics. I take a big dump all over it. Robbie defends it a little bit, but it doesn't quite
the last one.
Doesn't quite hold up to what we saw as a kid, unfortunately.
It's better than the third one, though.
Oh, we're doing that in a couple weeks. Yeah, we got Rocketeer. Oh, Rocketeer's the next one with fights. So our coworker fights.
Oh, that's a movie that exists.
There's 88 films. They have really good ones. They have really good.
Oh, nice. Stuff. Yeah. You expand, you know, a lot of criteria.
Oh,
a lot
nope,
of
there you go.
We talked about this one. After we talked about it, I bought it. Casino, I never had.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Casino. So Casino, I got the steelbook for Casino. Casino has one of the worst steelbooks of all time, artwork-wise. It's like complete AI. It's horrible. Ugh. But it's in 4K, so you have to have it. It's like I had that. Yeah. I gotta have Casino. Yeah, that's it. for our kind of catch up, what we've been watching, what we've been buying. It's time for our the next up in our top 50. All right, our top 50 movies of the century so far, 2000 through 2025. We are on to 20 through 11. Let me run down what we have so far. 50 through 21, Interstellar, Wind River, Road to Perdition, The Big Short, Boyhood, Memories of Murder, Before Sunset, Memento, Sideways, Sicario, Michael Clayton, Nope, The Worst Person in the World, Get Out, City of God, In Bruges, The Martian, Dune Part 2, Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, Mission Impossible, Fallout, Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair, Ocean's 11, Old Boy, Sinners, Inception, Whiplash, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, La La Land, Lady Bird, Django Unchained. And that brings us to number 20 on all five lists.
Wow.
All five lists. 37 for me, 75 for Kirk, 68 for Ken Jack, 34 for Clemmer. It is Gooch who has it highest at 18. 2011, Bennett Miller's Moneyball. Moneyball shows up at 20, which I, big fan of this showing up. And I didn't have it in my top 20, but I'm glad it is in the top 20. Gooch, I will let you lead the way. I'll have a small rant about this, but Gooch, I'll let you lead the way. You have the highest, 18.
Yeah, I mean, it just does everything that I love that the great, great sports movies do, which is they focus on the things outside of the ballpark, outside of the field, and do it brilliantly. The performances are just incredible. You have Philip Seymour Hoffman as like the fourth billed guy showing up and just fucking dominating. Brad Pitt, I think, maybe his best performance. Like, he is really, really fucking good in this movie. I love it. I know people do have issues with the inaccuracies, but it doesn't bother me as much as someone who really was not aware, you know, conscious for that run. So it works on pretty much every single level. I think it looks fantastic. Performances are great. The score is fantastic. I love it. Love my ball.
The inaccuracy is so rewatchable. I don't care about. I do not care if they don't mention the pitchers really all that much. I don't care about Miguel Tejada. The point of the movie is who they're replacing. They're trying to replace Johnny Damon. They're trying to replace Jason Isringhouse. Like, that's the point of the movie, Jason Isringhouse. Like, they're trying to replace those guys. That's the point. That's what they get to. They lose in the end. They don't win. They don't change it. They don't have him win. It's great. It's I think it's the best Jonah Hill. I think it's better than he was in Wolf of Wall Street. Brad Pitt, unbelievably funny in this movie too. His deliveries are excellent. I mean, the scene around the table when he first introduces those three is one of my favorite movie scenes ever. It's just so fucking good. Including just like the small time actors playing the scouts, like who's Fabio, like stuff like that. Like, it is excellent. Great music in this movie. I wish Aaron Sorkin would have maybe shoehorned in some more politics, missing some of that Aaron Sorkin political vibe. But other than that, great. Yeah, it's, I love Moneyball. Love.
We need Bennett Miller to make more movies.
Yeah.
He takes his time, that's for sure.
He doesn't make movies. Like,
but it's a great. But again, it's a great director taking a Sorkin script as opposed to Sorkin directing. Mm-hmm. Right. That's you can never go wrong. And I agree with Gooch. I think it's. I was always kind of an on the fence Brad Pitt guy. Because we get too quirky, or I can find boring sometimes. But this is the first time I remember seeing it, thinking, "Oh, okay, yeah, like this is like a movie star performance. Like we're good. Like we're in good hands." And yeah, it's great. Yeah, I just stuck it on my list, but I don't care that Tim Hudson's. Who cares?
It's great. It's funny to talk about, and you do bring it up if you're a sports fan. But like, right? Yeah. It's like it's like people crap on this point. They crap on like Draft Day when terms.
It's a great, great book. Great movie combo. I did not think. I remember reading about it thinking, because remember, Soderbergh was originally attached to direct this. You know, he wound up leaving the project. That was a Soderbergh-Pitt movie originally. And I remember thinking, this is not adaptable. Like, wait, what's the story here? And that's the beauty, is that there really isn't like much of a story at all. It's just like, it's math.
You know? And awesome, like, character study.
Yeah. And it's, And Bean's interesting because he's exactly not that kind of guy. Like, he doesn't fit that mold as a player, which is interesting. Yeah, it's great. Really good. Really smart.
Great script. I love, like you mentioned, like just having real actors. Like, those dudes in that baseball room, like, those are real people. Those aren't like, you know what I mean? Those aren't like the old, you would hire some like handsome old actor to do. Those are real dudes. Appreciate that. But like Chef said, like, if they talked about hanging Chads maybe a little bit more, It would have been better, but that's only knock I got on it.
Just missing that Sorkin touch.
I could live without the Robin Wright stuff, but you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
But then you don't
get Robin Wright and Spike Jones.
True. And Spike Jones. True. And Arliss Howard Clemmer is John Henry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Beloved figure.
A retroactive, this should have won Best Picture, right? Agree on that?
Or Gravity?
The Artist should have won. The Artist won The Descendants.
No. Jesus Christ, yeah.
The Artist won The Descendants, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, which one of the all-time worst nominees of a Best Picture. The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, which I could make the debate
Midnight
there.
In Paris.
I do love Midnight in Paris. Tree of Life, War Horse.
Tree of Life I like a lot, too, but yeah, I would vote Moneyball again retroactively, I think.
Sure. What a bad year for nominees. My
what the
God.
Fuck happened? Why the Artist? What was that? One of Harvey's last? Like what? What was he? What happened? How'd that?
You underestimate the power of Gene Dujardin.
Yeah. Academy Award winner. Yeah.
Warner Bros. No American.
Was it? Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. Gene Dujardin, who I know him more for Monuments Men, but that's
of course. Who doesn't?
What did Trill used to call him? What was it?
John
Mustard or something.
So that's 20. Moneyball, number 20. Number 19. This actually ended up on only two lists, but it got a big bump from being in the top 30 for two people. I think it's the last movie that only. No, there's a couple that show up on two lists that are in like top 10, top five. But that is. Actually, I thought it was on three lists. Hold on a second. I feel like I'm wrong on this one. Yeah, it's on three lists. Sorry, it's on three lists. It's on Kirk's list, Ken Jack's list, and Gooch's list. It's all in the top 30. Not on mine, just missed on mine. I'd assume missed close on Clemmer's, and that is 2006, Alfonso Cuarón, Children of Men. Children of Men. Kirk, you have the highest at 23.
Yeah, great. I mean, sort of a great, you know, filmmaker, young at that point. Also, a great twist moment in this movie. I was like stunned in the theater. I had no idea that was going to happen. It looks great. Again, sort of like I think we talked about this as a guy we thought was going to be a great star and kind of. Yeah, just kind of, you know, and just a great fast feel to it. I remember being in the theater, like I was like, this movie is fucking alive. And it kind of is, I think, sort of faded away in the last 20 years. I don't hear anybody talking about this movie really much at all. Like it's not. I'm glad it's on the list. When I listed that, I thought, I don't know. I assume Clemmer had never seen it.
I looked it up. I wondered. I'm like, I wonder if Clemmer hasn't seen it. So I'll throw something out here. I've actually only ever seen it one time.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's not a movie I revisit a whole lot, but it's.
It was like, it's kind of been forgotten. I feel like when it came out, it kind of didn't get a lot. Like, it was just kind of. I feel like almost it's gotten more over time.
That's fair. Yeah, because it really didn't land. It didn't do much. But as long as what you're telling people about, like, you got to go see this. And like, what is it? Who? What? And, you know, it's Julianne Moore. Like, yeah, but it's really terrific. I mean, yeah, it's my favorite of his movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's one of my favorites, I think, of the 21st century for sure. It's one of those things where, like, you recompense, like, where the movie is versus how much you like it. I love it. There's so many great scenes in it, too. Like, Michael Caine shows up and just crushes it. The scene where he's talking to, like, his cousin, and he's like, how do you look at what's happening in the world and just, like not even think about it? Or not even, like, worry about it. He's like, I just don't think about it. Like, there's so many great scenes like that. And a lot of young actors that I think went on to do great things. Like, Chiwetel Ejiofor, smaller role in this, goes on to be huge. I think like Garrett Hudson or who's the guy from Sons of Anarchy is in it. Like,
oh, Garrett Hedlund?
Not Hedlund. It's the guy that was in Sons of Anarchy is in it. I think it's whatever. But yeah, he's in it. Like a bunch of younger actors.
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, sorry. Charlie Hunnam's in it. A few other random actors came on to do bigger things too. And I think when we talked about our favorite cry movies, this is one of my every time cry movie. The scene where they lead the baby out of like the house. Every time cry movie. It's I love it. Great. And like you were saying, Cuarón, when I think like maybe when he was younger, maybe just something was just working because he was really trying a lot of shit. Like the oners in this are insane. And man, I love it. I rewatch it like probably once every year and it only gets better with age.
Yeah, there's a tweet going around, or there was this week, about the use of oners in like modern movies. And they've kind of ran their course in a way, or maybe not ran their course, but they're just used so liberally and without purpose. this movie uses them so well. Mm-hmm. It uses them so well. It carries so much weight. And I think this is, in terms of dystopian, it does such a great job in grounding the audience. Like, it all feels so, like, if the world was to fall apart, this would be what we'd be looking at. This is how we would act and how we'd interact with each other. And I think it stays with you. It is a very, very heavy movie. And the end just hits like a fucking freight train, you know? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. If you've never seen it, like you guys were saying, it does fly under the radar. If you've never seen it, absolutely watch it.
Yeah, 200 of Men, I think, again, I've only seen it once, and I definitely think it's really good, but that I think it belongs definitely in the top 20. For sure. I think it's a good spot for that at 19. 18. This is on my list, Ken Jack's list, and Clemmer's list. Very high for Ken Jack, 11. 20th for me. And that is 2016, Dave McKenzie's Hell or High Water. I love this movie. One of the best third act turns in any movie on this list. I sat up in my, I remember sitting up in my, I was engaged to begin with, but I remember like sitting forward when that shit happens in that movie. When that bank scene happens, you're like, holy fuck. You're like, what on earth? And it was good going into that, but then it just hits a different gear. This is, all the performances are fantastic. It got love in terms of award nominations, but I think probably deserved more wins than it got. I will always cape for Hell or High Water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeff Bridges is incredible. Just perfect. And it probably the best Chris Pine and best Ben Foster we've gotten. Ben Foster is really good in a lot of stuff. But this, and it just works fantastic too. You feel the bleakness. You feel at the time, like especially some of like how the downtown just so run down. You felt like the economic kind of peril there. It's very good. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the best neo westerns ever. Just like getting that like feel of an old western into the modern world takes tough. And I think they did. Sheridan obviously was the best. Maybe he's just done with it now, but he was just the best at it. And like you're saying, definitely the best Pine role, in my opinion, best Pine performance. And Foster, I think I would only have like Leave No Trace, maybe like just above it. But Ben Foster is unbelievable. And Bridges, like, just out of nowhere, great. Everyone is. And always
out of nowhere. He's always great.
Yeah, just, but it's like out of nowhere for, I guess, maybe this specific type of role, maybe. Like old fucking West guy. Like this and, I guess, True Grit, right? Those are the big two ones. But I think those are both really good. I really enjoyed that. I think it shot beautifully. David McKenzie, I don't know where that David McKenzie has been, but I miss him dearly because this movie was beautifully shot, well executed. And like you were saying, that third act is insane. Really good.
This is the type of movie that almost feels like it could have been released in 1970. Like it feels like a relic of the past that we
How
just
close
got
on your
handed
list,
in 2016. I mean, all three of those, that Sheridan Western trilogy would probably land in my top 125. Like that's easily. I mean, I have the trilogy right behind me. I love it, but not far off.
Yeah. I don't like it as much. I like it. I actually don't like Bridges in it. That performance didn't work for me, but yeah, I like it. I like it.
Ben Foster should have got a nomination for this movie too.
Yeah, he's excellent. Yeah, he's excellent.
So that is Hell or High Water at 18. Next one is very interesting. It's on four lists. It's on three top 25s. It's 75 for me. It dropped a little bit upon rewatch. Still love it. Don't get me wrong. Not on Kirk's list. I'm very curious if we read this list in 10 years where this would land. And that is last year's Marty Supreme at number 17.
The fuck out of here.
Jesus. All 20th Let's for Ken go. Jack, 22 for Clemmer and Gooch. I had it at 75. Clemmer, I'll let you lead this one.
I love this movie. I love the frenetic energy. I guess if you're, we've talked about it a ton in the show. But I like that Uncut Gems kind of anxiety. I enjoy that. Chalamet's performance is incredible. I still think he should have won Best Actor. Michael B. Jordan's great, but I know this is Chalamet was better. I love the different characters. I just appreciated the ride. I could have done an hour more of this movie. I just liked hanging out with this character and seeing how much his ambition would drive him. And I love how in the end he realized like what truly was important. I don't know. I really love this movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. I love that frenetic any sort of energy in a movie. That's like I think it's a Safdie's taste thing where it's like if you love that, you really would love Marty Supreme. And at least in my opinion, being like this the total evolution of the filmmaking or filmography so far. I love it, and I agree with Clemmer. I would have still had Marty or Chalamet as the number one actor from that year, but because his performance was insane. And I love all the supporting actors. Like, Odessa Zion was insane. Like, all of them are great. So I loved it. Really, really enjoyed it. I mean, you should go watch our review of it as well.
Yeah. I am very interested to see 10 years from now, what is the status of this movie and, like, how do people think about it and talk about it? Because on Arrival, it does feel like something that's going to stick around. Like, I love, and last year, One Battle After Another was my number one movie. That's reflected in my rankings. But I do think 10 years from now, the movie people will still be talking about is this one. It's the performance. It's the energy to it. There's so many great lines and moments that are already kind of, you know, seeping into, like, conversation and just how, you know, meme territory, stuff like that, which, you know, isn't part of the quality of a film, but does kind of speak to, like, how iconic I think it will be. I loved it. I really did. I don't know how they're going to follow this up. It's going to be tough.
Mm. So I'll say this now. So I still love this movie. Don't get me wrong. It's at 75. Their other movie is much higher for me. And I'll say this now. I think it makes sense because we're talking about a Safdie movie. Kirk and I had Uncut Gems. Kirk, you had it at 58. I had it at 18. It is 51 on the list. The last movie cut off on our top 50 was Uncut Gems. Uncut Gems ended up, I think, a couple points behind Interstellar. So Uncut Gems was cut. Uncut Gems, for me, I like more and more as time passes. It's one of my favorite movies ever. And I do prefer it to Marty Supreme, but I still like Marty Supreme. But I know Kirk, not a fan of this movie.
I mean, I liked Uncut Gems. I didn't need to see it again, you know? And that, to me, one of the Safdie brothers tried to make an interesting movie and failed. And one of them tried to repeat a movie that was successful and got a lot of success. Like, you know, Smash Machine didn't work, but went outside his box. The other guy said, okay, I'm going to essentially do the same movie all over again and just set it in a different time. Like, I thought it was lazy. I thought it was lazy filmmaking. Like a talented filmmaker.
I do want to see him try something different next time. That is for sure.
I was like laughing. I was like, this is the same fucking movie. Like, am I the only, like, same movie? So yeah, I mean, well made, but yeah, just did not. I was disappointed in laziness creatively.
So 17 is Marty Supreme. Moneyball 20. Children of Men 19. Hell or High Water 18. Marty Supreme 17. Number 16 is in Clemmer's top 10. It's 39 for me. It's 15 for Ken Jack, and that is Marty. Martin Scorsese's The Departed.
Oh, yeah.
Comes in at 62. Back-to-back just rippers for Kirk. But this is very high on your list, Clemmer, so I'll let you go again. You have it at number 8.
Perfect stupid movie for Clemmer.
No. Get out of here. This is a great movie.
We're in the same ball, Clemmer. Clemmer, I'm right there with you on this one. I do love The Departed.
You love it, Jeff? Oh, I love it then. Sorry, I love it. I have it, number four on my list. Number four. I think it's Marty's best movie.
I'm not surprised to hear that. DiCaprio and the Damon stuff is fantastic. I mean, look, there's a lot going on in this movie. It's a wild movie. You could, I think, nitpick stuff like the rat at the end. I don't love that. But I loved the entire...
I'm almost coming around on the rat, though, because it's like the number one thing people hate on. I've almost decided I like the rat at this point.
The more rewatch it, the more I'm invested in not the little things that kind of annoy me about it, but more the DiCaprio and Damon stuff that I really loved. And I really carries it. I think one of DiCaprio's best, and that's saying a lot. Scorsese does a great job directing this. I really love this movie. I enjoy that. Also, Damon, how often do we get him playing a villain? Like, that was fun too. Like, I don't know. This movie really works for me.
He's played a villain kind of a lot, but yeah.
I feel like he hasn't played like this kind of. Has he?
He played like Ripley, like Ripley, the informant. Sure. He was a bad guy. I mean, like he's played, you know.
Yeah, but that's what, you know, three movies in a 35-year career. I'd say more often than not, Man.
Dr. Hugh Man, yeah.
Dr. Hugh Man in Interstellar.
Tom McCarthy movie, yeah.
Maybe more right, and this may be more of like a scummy, outright scummy bad guy versus like a psychological bad guy, I guess, in that case, versus like Ripley, maybe.
Tough accent for him, too. He never used it before, so that was good.
No.
Kirk, how do you feel about the Nicholson performance? Terrible. I feel like that's...
It's like Brando and like Down the Doctor. Like, he's just fucking out of control, and Scorsese didn't know what to do with him. It's like it's actually a bad performance by a great actor, and it's just stupid. And the movie, the minute, to me, the minute Nicholson allows DiCaprio in knowing he'd been a cop before. I'm like, this is fucking dumb. That would have never happened. Like, that would have never. Oh, he hit his arm against a bar a couple of times. Oh, okay, sure. No problem. It's just stupid. It's lazy. It's dumb. Wahlberg is so miscast. That's like a role of like a 60-year-old. Like, why is Wahlberg like partners and like Martin Sheen? Like, what? Like, it makes no sense. Like, it's Martin Sheen, who I love. His accent's horrible. It's just terrible. Like, the scene where fucking Damon Sprinton like deletes the video is so stupid. Like that would be videotaped. Like, well, like, they're just dumb. That's not nitpicking. That's just fucking movies. It makes no sense. Makes no sense. DiCaprio is when he's like, you know who I am? They fucking know
this is this is one of those ones though. Throw me all that dumb shit. I'm chomping on it hook, line, and sinker. I don't know.
I am too. I mean, the rooftop scene is one of the best scenes of the century. I'm enjoying this whole ride.
I do fully get the Nicholson being a tipping point though. If you don't buy into that, it is a movie ruiner. If you don't like it, like, I can't even really fault you on that. It's like, okay, I get it then.
Terrible. I think he's terrible. I was so disappointed when I saw it. It's my favorite director, you know. It's a bummer. But
what would you give this movie, Kirk? Like, if it was a great.
I mean, realistically, like, I mean, obviously, it's not a bad movie. But given my expectations for Nicholson, Scorsese,
yes,
Damon, DiCaprio, I will say this about it: it was the first time, I don't even count The Aviator really, where I was like, oh, Leo's like a grown up now, like he's a believable grown up. So that was important for that, I will say.
39, 15 for Ken, Jack, 8 for me, lands at 16 on our list. 15, number 15 on all 5 lists. All 5, 47 for me, Kirk 66, Ken, Jack 31, Clemmer 58, Gooch top 10. This is what really pushed it over the top. 2025, Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another, which I will say right now, this is 47 for me on my list. Check back in 10 years, it might be like top 25.
Yeah, like, this is the one. I don't think Martin Sheen. I think you're right. I think this is the one that's going to rise over time, I think.
I think Sinners is the
one. Sinners is already there, though. Like, yeah, Sinners is already.
Clemmer, I don't disagree with, like, Sinners in 10 years, I think is me. But I think Sinners is to a point where it's like, where I think One Battle, like, has room to. I think there's a higher ceiling for One Battle because I think Sinners is closer to that ceiling already.
Maybe.
Not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It's not a knock on Sinners. I mean, I fucking love Sinners, but.
Yeah, my favorite movie that year.
I think One Battle will gain respect over time in film circles. Like, the people who really watch movies and talk about movies and, like, are really into this stuff. But in terms of, like, the broader general public is what I'm speaking to. Like, Marty Supreme, I think, will stick around. It's just more accessible, hits the ground running immediately and doesn't really challenge you in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't challenge you in the same way One Battle After Another is really asking you to tackle with some, like, just heavy stuff.
I still don't love the first 30 minutes. I think it's long in the tooth. I think everything after the time jump is literally perfect. Like, if I only graded the movie from the time jump on, it's 100 for me. Like, that is how much I love this movie. The music, I mean, just that whole scene from him leaving the house and going under the tunnel with that music, the ocean wave song on the score is just, it's still in my head. I think about it all the time. It's just unbelievable. And that's like one of those ones where you're like, not many people can do that. Like, not many people can put some shit together like that. Like, only someone like PTA could do that. Again, I don't hate the first 30. I just don't love it. And that's what knocks it down a little bit for me. But again, this is one where you check back in 10 years, it's probably higher on my list. The more and more I watch it, based on the fact that it's kind of steadily moved up a little bit here and there. I've seen it now, I think, 3 or 4 times. So yeah,
glad. I'm trying to think of another movie to compare it to. Like, I'm like trying to think of, like, what movie would be similar to One Battle that after like 20 years or so we went back and looked like, oh, this is, I feel differently about this now, or I feel better or worse. It's really hard. There's not a lot of movies that I feel like blended that same level of like whatever plot line with the political elements of it, and like it's very hard to find another movie to compare it to. Like, I can't really think of one.
What's funny is a movie that he compares to the most is not political, but is one of my favorite movies of all time, is Midnight Run.
Sure. Yep.
And like that, it's like, it's kind of got that element to it. Midnight Run has only grown over the years, and I get his comparison to it. So but I feel like 30 years from now, it's going to have a place. I mean, obviously, is Leo the actor who's first billed the most on this list or no?
Has to be.
I would imagine, right? Yeah.
Matt, I mean, we may not be done yet. I don't know. But what, we have three already?
That's a good question. Yeah, when I put this list together, yeah, that's a very good question.
Do you count Django?
He's definitely not first build, right?
Right.
No, that's true. Yeah, but what, we have Wolf of Wall Street, right?
Right on.
Has that been on yet?
I don't think so.
We've not seen Wolf of Wall Street yet, no.
Okay. Yeah. May show up, may not, I don't know. So yeah, so if you count Django, he's going to have, you know, three or four, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Are we going to get to Don't Look Up here soon?
I have a second on my list. I hope so.
No spoiler, but I see McKay out there. So that is one battle after another at 15. Number 14. Oh, boy. I'm shocked this isn't on three list. It's only on two, but it's number three for two people. So it gets a huge bonus of being top five and top and being a third, which gives you bonus points. Because we could have done this in a way where it was like, what's the average ranking? But I think there would have been, for the most part, almost no disagreement or anything interesting. You don't get The Road to Perdition. You don't get Interstellar. It's like, that's why we gave the bonus points. So these both get huge bonus points for being three, and that is, it's 100 out of 100 for me. It's one of the greatest movies ever made, in my opinion. Ken, Jack, you have it at three as well, and that is Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King.
Oh, yeah.
Second Lord of the Rings movie to show up on the list. Obviously, if you're new here and maybe you haven't joined in, Clemmer and Kirk hate Lord of the Rings, so it's never going to be on their list.
You know what? I totally respect your opinion, though.
Yeah, that's right.
I respect your opinion.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much we want to wax put about fucking Lord of the Rings in the year 2026, but it is what it is to me. It's just this unbelievable epic. So many moments. I don't know. You either love it or you don't. What do we compare this to? We were comparing it to the other day. Oh, we're talking about this first Dune. This Dune, I would tell people, like, even if it's not your cup of tea, give it another try. Where I said, again, if you don't like Lord of the Rings, you tell me you watched it and didn't like it, I wouldn't say that. I'd be like,
yeah,
all good. Like, yep, it's not your thing. Like, I understand it. Because it is a lot. But I fucking love it. I love all of it.
I imagine, like, showing this to Clemmer and just being like it's literally torture devices. Like, every single disc on the fucking Blu-rays. Look at that, a whole nother page of them.
Poor Ian Holm. Oh, God.
The one thing I'll say about these movies, and I think, Kendrick, you agree with that. If you're showing someone these movies for the first time, do not show them the fucking extended cut. No. Do not show them.
I did that.
God, Jesus. No.
There's extended cuts?
No.
I did that too.
Oh,
yeah.
So, it's like 4 hours long. The extended cut.
Oh, you didn't know about the extended?
Oh,
Die Hard.
Oh, they're incredible. They're incredible. Oh. I did this to my wife.
4 hours long.
She said like
more trees and stuff?
just a lot of walking around in the woods.
They actually show a sleepover in the bed at the end of Return of the King. They're all in the bed together.
This is a crossover. Part two of Michael. They should have friggin' Tom Aston show up.
Dude, what do you call it? I did this to my wife. She said, like, on my birthday a while back, she's like, I'll watch whatever movie you want. And I'm like, okay, we're watching Lord of the Rings. And we did the extended edition Fellowship of the Ring, which is 4 hours long. And I kept telling her, she's like, wow, it's getting, how much longer stuff? I'm like, yeah, we're probably like almost there. And then I accidentally hit the remote and it showed like the screen thing. And then we're like halfway through, it's been 2 hours. And she's like, no, we're done. It's over. Yeah. Happy birthday.
That's domestic abuse, I think, Ken Jack.
Yeah. What are you, Drew Peterson?
Jesus Christ. Just the different elements of the battle, the ride of their harem. Oh my God. Just that's one of my favorite moments. When they fucking show up over that hill. And you zoom out.
So
just
good.
Hell yeah.
I mean, at this point, what more are we going to say? It's like,
that hill is cool.
Not Bernard Hill.
Don't mock. People
on horseback, the battle.
I hate these movies. I mean, here's this movie.
I know you do. I know you hate them.
Mock away. I hate these fucking
movies. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Best picture.
Mm-hmm. Best picture winner. I won't ever try and convince someone to like these. You either like it or you don't. And I do also, get it.
Yeah.
I do.
Peter Jackson totally being skinny now is like weird too. I don't like that. It's like
a whole thing. Yeah. 13 is on four lists, and it's someone's number one movie. Someone's number one movie. I have it at 29. Clemmer has it at 73. Gooch has it at 46. Kirk has it at one. That is 2007. David Fincher's Zodiac. Zodiac, Kirk, your number one ranked movie of the century. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, just a masterpiece. Like a movie that you can watch it. You learn something new every time you watch it. you know, incredible director. Like just the intricacies of it. Every shot matters. Every performance. Even Gyllenhaal, I think people criticize. I think is cast correctly in this movie. Not a false note. Anthony Edwards, unbelievable. Ruffalo, like a great example of a great director, like reining in Ruffalo's, you know,
yes,
wackiness. To me, you know, the scene where they interview him, it break at work, Lee Arthur Allen, is my favorite mm-hmm. scene of the century. It's just a psychological study, a journalism study, in a study of three people who break. And I love movies. Another movie that same year that ranks very, very high on my list that I'm sure we'll see much later, focuses on a guy who ultimately failed as well. And I love movies like that where it doesn't work out. Another great ending. The last shot of this movie is fucking great. And it's a great little, like, to me, the scene when they go down the basement is like a great horror movie scene. Fincher does it all here. I don't think this movie got a single Oscar nomination in 2006.
Crazy.
Not one. And to me, it's like, you know, somebody just did a Q&A with him.
It was Park Chan-wook, I think.
It was. Yes, it was. I think it was, right?
Or it was Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah, yes, it was. And he just kept talking about how it's the most important movie he's ever seen. And I get it. The influence of this movie, I think, really resonates. We talk about the movie that's grown. This movie, huge director, had no buzz when it came out, didn't make any money, really. I saw it opening day. I was stunned. I was like, this is one of the great. I think it's a good companion to All the President's Men. I think it might be better, honestly, or at least as good. So, yeah, number one for me. Who doesn't have it on their list?
Ken Jack does not.
Ken Jack. Well, yeah. I mean, there's no hobbits in it, to be fair. If
there was at least one walking tree instead, and one less John Carroll Lynch, maybe.
That would be better. That would.
Yeah. Is that like the last
was a hobbit? There were three movies that came out that year that are about a man failing. And all three, I didn't really love the first time I saw them. And then when I need to rewatch it again because they're just so antithetical to like what we kind of expect from movies, I guess. And
I actually say for Clemmer, one I almost put in left off was the one Tommy Lee Jones got nominated for, In the Valley of Elah.
See, have you seen that?
Yeah. What? You haven't seen that?
No.
It's great. He's really good in it. But yeah.
And I needed to rewatch it again. Like the first time I saw Zodiac, I walked out. I'm like, I was kind of frustrated because I love Fincher and I was like, oh man. But upon rewatch, I'm like, oh no, like I had my expectations, like this is gonna be too clean, and it's not. And that's the beauty of this movie, is the obsession is the point of the movie. It's not what he's finding out, and how it can destroy you, and how it you sometimes can fail. It's a brilliant movie. All the performances are great. I think Gyllenhaal's great.
I like everyone in this movie.
They're underappreciated.
Yeah, Fincher really broke him, I guess.
What are the great journalism movies of the 21st century? Be this in Spotlight, and then like Nightcrawler, but that's not really out journalism.
Kind of is though, Ken Jack.
She said, definitely She Said for sure. Yeah. She Said's a great, great film.
Yeah, of course.
I think about this movie all the time. I was watching it a little bit the other day. I'm so bummed when Anthony Edwards leaves. I'm like, oh, fuck.
He's the smartest guy in the movie.
He is. I know. He's like, yeah, I don't want to do this. Like, this.
You realize what's going to happen if he keeps going down the road. Like, that to me is like, I didn't, the first time I saw that, I didn't pick up on that. I needed to see it again to really understand.
Yeah.
This is, I think, this is at 46 for me, but every time I rewatch it, it does ascend. Like, this is one of the most rewarding rewatches you can sit through, despite how, like you said, Clemmer, very frustrating, but that's the point. Like, it drives you mad.
Oh, Robert Downey Jr., too. He's so
great. Before we lost him, like, you know, to, yeah. And a great, a fun Brian Cox cameo, too. He's freaking bringing it.
Kelly Sevigny,
yeah.
I mean, just treated like shit. Like, I don't know why she slept with JG.
Yeah, everybody.
That is our number 13, 76 all time for me, 29 on my list for this century. 12, it's on three lists. 10 for me, 5 for Ken Jack, 16 for Gooch.
Oh, come on.
2002, Peter Jackson's The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Next.
Let's go.
So to be fair, when we first decided
this should
we were
be like
this.
Kill, this should be like Kill Bill. This should be a fucking one spot.
It should be one movie.
Yes.
You know, honestly, we probably should have done that just for the sake of interesting. When we first thought about this back in the fall, though, Kirk, this was the first thing that we came up. We mentioned that. We're like, how do we make this? Because like I said, there's going to be this crossroads of the three Lord of the Rings movies, because the three of us love them and the two of you hate them. And we were like, how do we? And then that's kind of how we came with like the point system and like how things should land. So,
but I think that's great though. Like, that's the beauty. Yeah. Like, you know, like that's what makes movies great. Like, you know, Ken Jack hates Zodiac.
He's not
Fincher guy. And you know, he likes when Ian Holm is tickling people. That's fine. Everybody has a fetish.
They got hairy feet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, hairy feet. Yeah, they're little guys.
Clever, which of the three do you like the most?
What's that?
Which of the three do you like the most?
The first one.
Okay.
Really?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. That's like, I don't even know how to. I guess.
I went in the first one. I was so hopeful, and like half an hour in, I'm like, oh no! I was so excited because I really like the Frighteners. So I'm like, this is I'm so excited for the movie. I sat in the theater. I was all pumped up, and I'm like, this is dreadful.
Obviously, they all are very similar, like in terms of like aesthetic, and like they are very fantasy driven. But I do think they, like, within the trilogy are distinct from one another. Like, this is the Two Towers, I think, has the best blend of drama and action. I think the action is fucking unbelievable in Two Towers. Unbelievable.
Yeah, really. I mean, if you really want to think about it one way, like, destroying Sauron was like capturing a serial killer in a way, because he was trying to genocide all of Middle Earth.
No idea what you're talking about, but yeah, probably. Yeah, probably. Is that Kate Blanchett?
So that's 12. Yeah, 20. Okay. Moneyball, 19, Children of Men, 18, Hell or High Water, Marty Supreme, 17. The Departed, 16. One Battle After Another, 15. Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, 14. Zodiac, 13. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, 12.
Can't believe Number the Two 11. Towers are the Zodiac. I can't believe I just heard that.
I love that sandwich right in between.
It's almost like a fucking Lord of the Rings movie now. It's like grouped in with them. Oh, God.
Five people had this movie on their list. I actually thought this would have been top 10. There is a small... Everyone has it on their list, but I think there's a small like age thing as to maybe why it's on three, much higher than the other two. But all five have it. Just misses out on being a top 10 movie. 2007, Superbad. Superbad. 15 for me, 65 for Kirk, Ken Jack 18, 49 for Clemmer, 17 for Gooch. I'll say this now. This is the highest ranked comedy on our list, which I think makes complete sense. Easily the one that has the most impact, I think, that has had the most pop culture relevance, and is it's on everyone's list. I think everyone agrees. A fantastic comedy.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Just an instant classic. Like, just, you know, 2007 also, right, you said?
Yep, 2007. 2007 is a very big year on this list, especially if it's top 15.
Best year of the century, I think. But yeah, I have the lowest, so I'll speak the shortest knot. But yeah, I mean, just like, there's not... Also introduced huge stars. You know, I mean, the biggest of all, you know. So, I was just sitting there and list the scenes that are funny in it. But it's just, even the B plot is, like, just as funny as the A plot, which is pretty rare in a comedy like this. Usually you're kind of set lags, but, and it works out. The end is very funny. Just a great comedy that, you know, you're never going to see again, I think, sadly. I don't feel it anyway. Mm.
I remember when it came out, I was out of high school for 10 years, but I'm like, this is kind of how we talked in high school. Like, there weren't a lot of movies that showed how, like people actually spoke in high school. And I felt like it kind of nailed at least my 90s high school experience.
Mm. Definitely rang very true. And I do think it's almost good that not a lot of their movies will be able to capture, because I feel like a lot of movies did try. They're like, I don't want to try to make something on my own. I want to make something that just can do super bad and just can do something that they did again and get more audience to see it. Kind of like that. It felt real. It just felt like a real story that you had heard secondhand from a school over or something like that.
Right.
So really, it's the banner comedy for this.
It's like a generational thing. Like, weren't, like, it happened with like the Hughes movies and happened with like the Caddyshack. To me, that moment where Michael Cera is like almost flirting with his partner in that class, you know, like the guy there, and he kind of does that thing to his, like, I've never seen that before, like, that idea of comedy, which is very funny to me, where it just works.
Yeah,
so many small bit roles. Joe Latruglio, just a great little like scene with him. It's so funny. It's so like realistic and just relatable. It's relatable beyond
like obviously it was made in 2007 and just that, you know, what the world high schoolers live in is so different now, but still like kind of goes beyond just that generation, like in terms of relatability and just so, and again, so quick-witted, stupid, funny. So Superbad rounds out 20 through 11. Moneyball, Children of Men, Hell or High Water, Marty Supreme, The Departed, One Battle After Another, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Zodiac, Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and Superbad. So that is the last of the list until our top 10, which we will be doing next week on this show. Our top 10. Then we'll talk about our things that came close. I know I said one. We said Uncut Gems. But we'll talk about the ones that came very close on the list. Next week on the show, we are doing The Devil Wears Prada 2, I believe, right?
Yep, that comes out.
Devil Wears Prada 2. Clemmer, I know you and I will be seated for Angel Studios' Animal Farm. I don't think we'll be doing that on this show, though. Maybe we'll do the other Anne Hathaway. Maybe we'll do a double Anne Hathaway next week.
The Mother Mary
and Devil Wears Prada. Does that make sense? Maybe we'll do that. Definitely Devil Wears Prada, though. I'm kind of excited to go see that. Like, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good energy to it. I don't know. I think it's going to be fun. Good mark. Marketing's been kind of fun.
I like the first one. Yeah.
No Adrian Grenier, though, which is.
Don't say that. Don't say that out loud. Don't say that.
That is it. That is it for Ken, Jack, Kirk, Gooch, Clemmer. I'm Jeff DeLille. We'll talk to you next time.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off. Stella Blue Coffee ready-to-drink can lattes are officially available nationwide at Target. That's right, whether you're making a Target run for toothpaste, paper towels, or somehow spending $200 on things you didn't know you needed, stop by the coffee section and see why everyone is turning to Stella Blue. The cans are made with 100% Colombian coffee, real dairy, real sugar, and contain 190 milligrams of caffeine. They've got dessert-level flavor with coffee-level function. You can choose from espresso, sweet cream, or espresso cafe mocha. And once you try them, you'll understand why they're the best canned lattes out there. Here's the best part. 100% of proceeds will go toward our We Brew to Rescue mission, in which we're funding the adoption of 1,000 pets across the country. Grab a Stella Blue at Target, taste the difference, and make a difference. Stella Blue Coffee.